It's Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, a special edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, a special extended edition right now. I'm Drew Mindell, the host, joined by Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. I actually just got a message. I'm going to step out. We're going to have Jay Grossman on in a couple minutes.
Oh, that'd
so
be interesting.
I'm going to give this number to Remus, so you guys take it over.
Sure. And, of course, Jay Grossman being the player agent for the likes of Nikolai Habibulin,
former Ilya Kovalchuk,
Brian Leetch. He was a representative for Brian Leetch. And you know what? We want to get the perspective of agents, Ezzy, because, you know, there is an
Because you're a future player agent. Just
right. Because there is an impending battle, of course, as we spoke about, between the Players Association and, of course, the owners. And you know, the Players Association is affected, obviously, and players are by their agents. And, you know, negotiating the contracts and the flaws in the system, and obviously everything's intertwined. So
we've had Jay on the show before.
Twice, yeah, I believe.
We've had Jay on a couple times. So this was we just sent him a message earlier this morning, and he just responded. So this will work out well for timing-wise. It's like everything comes together so nicely there, doesn't it? Anyway, so Jay, he represents, what did you say, Nikolai Habibulin?
Kovalchuk.
Kovalchuk, I mean, he's...
Formerly Brian Leetch. So there's many of the Russian players as well, and so he, an experienced agent, I believe, since the mid-80s, so...
Okay.
And more importantly, like Ron Salzer told me at the draft, he's a member of the tribe.
Exactly. Anyways, we'll get to that later on. He's just... I think he's on hold, so we'll get to Jay in a couple seconds. And then we'll transition, of course, into the Jets-Sabres game, which is going to puck drop tonight, 6 o'clock here on TSN 1290. Dennis Bayak, Brian Munns, Shane Knighty with the call. Rick Ralph, who we heard from earlier, has the pre- and post-game coverage, of course, starting at 5 o'clock, the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show. Hustler and Lawless, minus Lawless, plus Hustler. I don't know who else. I don't know.
Hustler's here right now. I told him to maybe jump in later on in the show, but I think he might be taken off. So.
It's a Hustler plus one.
Is it plus one?
Hustler and Pollock. Has a good ring to it. That means that we would be losing Richie to H&L, but I don't like that.
No,
so.
It was Hustler and Pollock all week here on TSN 1290, but you're not going to do 10 hours of radio today, Richie?
I don't think so.
No?
Okay.
Hustler and Pollock, it's like Starsky and Hutch.
Yeah. You guys should fight crime in your spare time as well.
fight crime.
Richie does fight crime. He's a lawyer. What are you talking about?
That's very true.
Exactly. In a way.
Yeah, in a way. Anyways.
How'd you get in here then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Under subpoena.
As he's out on day parole.
Well,
I need a good PO.
Return him back. But, you know, before, Drew, we're going to speak to Jay here, let's, you know, frankly speak about the terrible two performances the Jets put together this week.
Yep.
Wednesday, Thursday, back-to-back in Montreal and then in Toronto. And if you're a Jets fan and you get 11 goals scored against you in two games, you have to think, okay, poor efforts against two teams, specifically the Leafs, but even the Habs, who are within striking distance of the Jets, if not past them in the standings, and two important intra-conference games, and two duds. And that's something that needs to be evaluated. Obviously, there's been lineup changes, but we'll speak about those after.
We have Jay Grossman. Let's go to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show player agent Jay Grossman. Jay, good afternoon now. Thanks for joining us on short notice today.
Yeah, thanks. It's a nice day here in New York. It was nice in Calgary. The weather was fucking nice.
Yeah, it's unseasonably warm throughout Canada, which we certainly don't mind here in Winnipeg. It's we're wearing light jackets the other day, which doesn't typically happen in January. Anyways, Jay, let's start with the realignment. I mean, you represent a number of well-known NHL players. In your conversations with those players, were there concerns? Did they bring up the concerns about the scheduling and the playoff inequalities first and foremost to you?
Well, I think that obviously it's the role of the Players Association to have those discussions with the players and with the board. And clearly what the Players Association indicated to us is that the two main concerns were the inequalities in the fact that there would be seven teams in some divisions and eight teams in others, and the fact that the percentage chance of making the playoffs would not be the same. The second concern seems to be the fact that It was unclear in terms of what additional travel burden would be, would be placed upon the players. I think the second part of it, the first part of it is it's a statistical fact, unless there's going to be further expansion, or a different alignment, you're going to have to come up with an equal number of teams in equal divisions or conferences in order to have that kind of even playoff chance. But the travel issue, I think, is a big issue. We talk about it a lot. It's interesting from Don Pierce's perspective, particularly because coming from baseball where, players would be situated in one city for, 3 days or 4 days where they would play, a series of games. I'm sure you guys, this is a hot button issue in Winnipeg playing in the Southeast Conference. But also can appreciate it from the players' perspective. The time zone changes are pretty significant.
Jay, when you talk about the inequalities in the divisions, and obviously there's a competitive advantage factor, the 7% difference between the 8-team conferences, and the 7-team conferences, is there also not some playoff money that some players would have a better advantage of getting than others?
That's correct, obviously, but, the majority of the players' compensation is not coming from the playoff pool, and an even lower amount of that is in existence in this CBA. So, that was not indicated, but, obviously, it is what it is, in terms of the, the division of dollars or whatever they may be.
Jay, if it was clear from the beginning of the realignment talks before going into the Board of Governors meetings back in December, if it was clear that realignment required an agreement between the NHL and the NHLPA, why wasn't the NHLPA more involved in this process from the beginning?
Well, you have to ask the parties that were involved. Seems to me you're placing that burden or onus on the Players Association.
No, I'm not placing the onus on the Players Association. It seemed like the NHL went ahead and announced this and almost said, as an afterthought, the NHLPA will have to go over this. And my question's phrased in another way is, do you think the NHLPA was involved in the process with the owners when it was clear that the agreement had to be made, this realignment wasn't going to go through without the NHLPA's consent?
Well, it's a partnership, right?
Yeah, supposedly. Do you think the NHL acted in good faith? Do you think that they're acting as a partner with the NHLPA, or were they just trying to run roughshod over them?
Well, it's hard to say. It's certainly a feeling out period between the current leadership at the Players Association and the league. This is the second issue now where there's been disagreement on, with the escrow issue still outstanding. Mm-hmm. And, again, I don't know if, if that's a motivating factor as a prelude to collective bargaining. It seems to me that the Players Association certainly at least has a valid position to take in these matters, which it is. I'm not certain. But, nobody has negotiated more collective bargaining agreements on the face of the earth than Don Pierre. And, Don has a good grasp of these things. And so, like I said, whether it's a prelude to collective bargaining or, in fact, just simple isolated incidents that he's not comfortable with, the players obviously have to weigh in, and if he doesn't have the support of the players, then, I don't see how he can advance these positions. So I'm sure he has canvassed them on it as well, and that's where we are.
You mentioned Donald Fair, Jay. And how has the Players Association, at least from your perspective, or from your players' perspective, excuse me, changed since he has taken over from Paul Kelly?
Well, I think it's changed very radically. I mean, like I said, I don't know of anybody, would have done negotiate or be a part of 8 or 9 collective bargaining agreements with Major League Baseball. I mean, I don't know of anybody that's even come close to that, whether they be any of the current commissioners or labor leaders. So, his experience, I mean, there's no substitute for that. And, I think he came in here with the thought process that he was going to get the association on its feet, and certainly he's accomplished that in terms of what happens from there obviously remains to be seen. And what are the key issues to the players? Again, I think we'll find that out because the last kind of collective bargaining, it was a lot more personal, and it was it was a situation where the owners clearly, in my view, had a one-sided result. And they negotiated the best possible collective bargaining agreement that they could for themselves. And that was the outcome of 2004, 2005.
We'll let you go on this last question, Jay. Fans are, of course, terrified that they're going to see a result, another 2004, 2005 lockout, lose another season of the NHL. Do you expect that the negotiations, when the CBA expires, are going to be as contentious, or do you think that there is more of a common ground that the two sides can find to work together with?
It's a hard question to answer because there has not been, I heard Bill Daly being interviewed saying that they have not begun negotiations in earnest, and I think until they get to that point, it's really impossible to predict what the outcome of that is. Where they stand on it. There are a number of issues, obviously. There are a number of issues internally with respect to the owners and the teams, and there are a number of issues internally with respect to the players. And I can only speak from what I've seen on the inside of the association. They've done a good job to get their house in order, and again, we'll find out here in the near future really what are the hot button issues for the players and what they're willing to stand up for.
Jay Grossman from Puck Agency, player agent. Thanks very much for joining us on short notice here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
No problem. Pleasure as always, guys.
Thanks, Jay, very much.
Thanks, Jay.
Thanks, Jay.
Take care. Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's head to commercial. We'll talk about that. We'll talk more about the Jets. Lots of hockey to come. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website, of course, is www.IllegalCurve.com. Send us some tweets. If we like them, we'll read them on air. Maybe we'll give away a toque or something. We have a lot to give away as well throughout the next 3 hours or a little less than 3 hours.
Are we giving away a kitchen sink?
We're not giving away a kitchen sink, but we do have some tickets to tonight's UND, University of North Dakota, Clarkson College game. It's going to take place at MTS Center.
We've got an alumnus of UND right here.
Yeah, that's true. We do have an alumnus of UND right here in Richard Pollock. So why don't we give away one set of tickets right now?
Okay.
First, not trivia.
I want to do my trivia.
We'll do trivia later. Your trivia was terrible.
Come on, let me do my trivia now,
Your
Richie,
trivia
come
was
on.
Terrible. First caller through at 780-1290. First caller through at 780-1290.
That's original, Drew.
Can you stop talking for a second,
I'm with Desi here.
Yeah, see, I got Richie on my side.
That's right.
That's great. You guys deserve each other. First caller through at 780-1290. We'll give you two tickets to tonight's Clarkson College college UND hockey game.
Drew, if you're going to do callers, just simple callers, you might as well make it a fun number, like 5. I like 5.
That's great.
What about 7? It's a good name.
7's a good number. 6 is good.
You guys done?
Mickey Mantle.
Anyways, you guys done about that?
Yeah, you know the answer to that.
I do know what the answer is. Anyways, let's talk about the Jets Sabres matchup tonight. The Jets have had some lineup changes. Apparently, Tim Stapleton is out of the lineup for tonight's game. He's out with the flu.
He's got the Toronto flu. He got that flu in Toronto.
I don't know.
King Street, I believe.
Yeah, that's great. Anyways, Tim Stapleton's out of the lineup. Brian Little back in the lineup for the Jets, which is very important. Alex Burmistrov out of the lineup. Yep. He's apparently got some sort of minor injury.
That's kind of weird.
It's a little bit weird.
Mid-level injury? What was it?
A mid-level injury. I don't know.
And that was after the report came out that he was a healthy scratch.
I thought the NHL was very clear in saying that an injury was either upper body or lower body. There's no middle.
Yeah, what does that mean?
There's no middle body.
And that was after the report that it was a healthy scratch.
Yeah, so that.
So I'm not saying it's not that, but I'm a somewhat suspect of that injury.
So you'll see.
Burmistrov finished the game last on Toronto. Did he not?
Did the Jets play in that game?
Oh, I forgot. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a pretty awful game.
Maybe he got the same flu that Stapleton got.
Yeah, he doesn't have a flu, though. They would have said if it was a flu if it was. Anyway, so you got a line. The Jets forward lines are going to, presumably, and of course we don't know this for sure, but logically, you're going to see Little back centering Kane and Wheeler.
Yep.
Renew that line. There's some shifting on the second line. So it sounds like it's going to be Ladd, Antropov, and Fair together.
Yes.
As one line. Yep. The GST line is back together.
Is he?
I just went through the roof.
Yeah, I know. You're very happy.
It's about time.
Yeah.
It is about time, frankly.
Yeah. The GST line back
saying
together.
Saying quickly yesterday when I was on with Hustler, saying that line, Slater and Glass doesn't work as well without Thorburn there. And I know Thorburn doesn't have any goals. I said that. Yep. But Thorburn's really good on the boards, really good on the forecheck, and that line likes to, the play they like to do is work it down low, and if they can, they pop Slater off on the half boards on the left side for a one-timer, and so Thorburn or Glass hits him.
And more importantly, they have magic powers. So when you have magic powers, and you're the GST line, and you have your own chant at the MTS Center that we've heard from, I believe it's Section 330, this is the most popular line on the team. I'm not taking any credit for it because I work for the fans of Winnipeg. I don't work for myself. I'm not here to toot my own horn. I work for the fans of Winnipeg. But seriously, all we've heard since the GST line was broken up is get them back together. And Richie's right. They do an unbelievable job at cycling the puck and even creating offense because Slater and Glass are also guys that contribute on the penalty kill. And Thorburn is going to get a goal eventually. I'm convinced.
But Ezzie, they're more effective than they were apart. I mean, Nietzsche on that line just wasn't as effective. That's just the facts.
And then the fourth line is going to be Mietnin, Wellwood, and
Patrice Cormier.
Yep. And then the Jets have a problem. I'm not sure if they're going to put I'm assuming with Cormier's recent success, they're going to put him in the middle and one of Wellwood or Mietnin on the left side, likely Wellwood. The Jets do have an issue in that they have too many right wingers or centers and not enough left wingers.
Yeah.
I mean, they played Fair and Thorburn on the same line, both right wingers, for a couple games there. So they could use that left-handed shot or somebody who can play the left side. Now, Wellwood's flexible, and Cormier can play the left side, and they can have Wellwood take draws and play center as well. But, I mean, if you look at that lineup tonight, I would say this. The Sabres are looking at the lineup and saying, oh, no, look who's in town.
Aside from the first line and the third line, the GST line, you've got half of your lines, which basically look like puzzle pieces that haven't been put together properly.
It's true.
And the thing is, with the Jets, and Richie was the first person that I heard in the Winnipeg media or in Winnipeg, or fans for that matter, that was saying that Burmistrov should be a center. And the problem that I have when Burmistrov is in the lineup is that he wasn't playing on one of the top two lines. Yeah. And if you look at how the Jets played in those two games against Montreal and Toronto, I mean, anybody that was watching those two games could see that they couldn't generate any offense.
Nothing.
And they finally put Burmistrov on the top line after it wasn't working out there. And Tim Stapleton has done an unbelievable job this year for the Jets, filling in because they weren't sure how they were going to use him. He's done a great job. He's not a top-line center in the NHL. He can't be centering Evander Kane and Blake Wheeler. He just can't be. So when you have Burmistrov in the lineup now, you have an issue because I would argue that with Little back, Drew, he's missed 8 games, I believe, and he's back. You have to have Burmistrov on a top two scoring line. You can't have him on this kind of makeshift line with Chris Thorburn. And I think Claude Noel has done a really good job with dealing with injuries because they've had, injuries, and that's the way it is. But I do think that he is mismanaging some of the lines. And I think when you have a guy like Cormier coming in, that's fine. He can play center or wing. But when Burmistrov comes back, you can't keep deciding where are you going to put him. You have to put him with Antropov. All of his success at the beginning of the year was with Antropov. And I think that the Ladd Antropov Burmistrov line makes sense. You got to if there's a guy that's going to come out of the lineup, and unless he starts producing, and I love him and he's from Winkler, but it's got to be Eric Fehr.
Amen.
Well, I'm curious to see Eric Fehr. First of all, that Eric Fehr, Nick Antropov and Andrew Ladd line is lacking in foot speed.
Yeah, and Fehr looked a little bit better, and that's hard not to look better than in the past couple of games than he did before. And Drew, yes, you mentioned that foot speed issue, and that was present with Wellwood. I think it's present there with Fehr that the lines worked themselves out tonight. I agree with Ezra completely, and whether or not Burmistrov seriously injured or not, I think he's been underutilized. Now, I do think, watching him closely, that his skating has been poor. He doesn't seem to be moving his feet a lot, and he doesn't seem to be playing that well. But also, it's a bit of a maybe like a self-fulfilling prophecy for Burmistrov. I mean, you're putting him into the fourth line.
So you're not giving him any opportunity
to
shine.
He's like, okay, I'm a fourth liner. And then so what happens is he has to change his game to be a fourth liner. And then so Noel takes him from the first or second line to the fourth line, basically puts him there for a prolonged period of time, says he's not offensively producing, then drops him out of the lineup. Well, if he's not offensively producing, why is Eric Fehr going to the second line?
Yeah.
I mean, Burmistrov has had success before. And as you mentioned, Ezzy, and I like that, what's Antropov done over the past month? Nothing. So why not put him back together again with Burmistrov? I agree completely
with
that.
Well, people forget. When Ladd, Little, and Wheeler was supposed to be our top line to start the year, the best line for the Jets to begin the year was Antropov and Burmistrov playing together.
Yep.
It was undoubtedly. I mean, the success wasn't terrific, but those two guys seem to have chemistry.
Yep.
So it seems like they're refusing to...
It's weird.
...to accept what's right there in front of you. Who's the future of this team? The future of the team is not Kyle Wellwood.
Or Tim Stapleton.
The future of this team is Alex Burmistrov. He was a top 10 pick. You know, you have to see what you have in him. You have to see if he's going to be an Evander Kane type player or if he's going to be a Jim Slater type player.
Right, and I want to go back to the second
line. In the sense of your first round pick there. You have to see where he's going to be.
And going back to the second line, and you know, if you listen to the show, I rarely throw any players under the bus. I'm not being sarcastic. And I do think that, you know, When the Jets acquired Eric Fehr, going back to the second line with tonight with Ladd, Antropov, and Fehr, I do think it's a good decision by Noel to start Fehr, because Fehr has suffered from that same problem as well. Eric Fehr had a serious shoulder injury, and he went through shoulder surgery and missed the beginning of the season. And if you look at players around the NHL, when that happens, look at Drew Doughty. And it's rare that a player can come back after missing that much time. You're talking about a Sidney Crosby and those special players that can miss all that time and then come back, and basically they don't miss a beat. But when you look at a guy like Eric Fehr, who's come back and he's struggled, it doesn't really help to have Eric Fehr on your fourth line playing 8 minutes a game. So the problem is, he needs to be given that shot at least before they start giving him, you know, the healthy scratch. But what I'm saying is, he should be the guy that, when Burmistrov comes back, you shouldn't be putting Burmistrov on a fourth line. He, over anybody on the team, needs to be
your
in
top
a scoring
two lines
position.
Need to be Kane, Little, and Wheeler, Burmistrov, Antropov, and Ladd.
Yep,
those are your six best players.
Yep.
I mean, it's not. I mean, that's pretty much as simple as it gets. Those are your six best players. Play them together. See what you actually have.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, Wellwood can get hot, and he's got nice hands. But I mean, come on.
Throw him on the second power play unit then.
Yeah, throw him on the second power play unit. That line, the Antropov, Ladd, and Wellwood line has generated next to nothing over the past 2 weeks.
And forget it. You
mentioned Ezzy, the second line. I mean, for me, watching this team lately, it's been the first line and nothing.
Yeah, well,
frankly,
I mean,
it's first line and three third lines.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Exactly right. Guys, let's leave it there. We'll have much more, of course. Congratulations to Wayne Van. He won the first set of tickets to tonight's UND Clarkson College game. We'll have more to give away throughout the show, so stay tuned for that. Lots more to come. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 12.9. Welcome back to the program. I've been flagged by Richard Pollock. He says that he's got a comment. Here we go.
Mike Harrington is joining us. He's from the Buffalo News. He's joining us at 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
He was down at practice this morning.
Yeah, the Jets had a game day
just
skate.
Posted.
The Sabres did not.
Just posted comments from Ron Hainsey regarding the change. And he said, here's Ron Hainsey's quote. There were a few things suggested and we were refuted in the attempt to sit down and meet about it or even tinker with it, Hainsey said. If you're in an eight-team conference for your entire career, you're at a 7% disadvantage of making the playoffs for your entire career. By the way, I think Ron Hainsey is probably the most well-spoken Jet of the bunch. Just throwing that
out. Didn't you have him on?
Had him on there yesterday.
And probably physically well-dressed and handsome.
Overall, yeah, well, that's you, Ezzy. But next comment. The travel from what limited stuff we got could possibly be worse for some Western teams, including Winnipeg, noted Hainsey. Without knowing what that looked like, it's hard to consent or not consent when the potential is there for worse travel. Further, we didn't block it. That's incorrect, Hainsey said. We asked to continue to meet to address concerns. That's not blocking.
It seems pretty reasonable.
No, but guys, it seemed like we didn't. I mean, Jay Grossman, obviously, you know, I when I was asking him the question about, you know, the NHLPA being involved in the process, and I don't think that that's the NHLPA's fault at all. I think, in fact, it's the NHL's fault. It's not really the point. The point is that they weren't included either way. And I think Ron Hainsey's right. I mean, the players, when they're looking at this, and there's so many things, like Richie said at the time a month ago, have not been thought out. Whether it's the travel or it's the playoffs, and that's a big thing. You think a guy like Ron Hainsey, who's been in the league now for a long time with the Habs and the Thrashers and the Blue Jackets and now the Jets, the guys that see how the playoffs are going to play out in years to come, Drew, you don't think that guys like that have Stanley Cup aspirations, they're not thinking that this is kind of a poor deal. They're absolutely looking at it like this was not thought out well, and they don't agree with it.
Well, it certainly seems as though it hasn't been thought out well, but, you know, and that's, you'll hear much more about
realignment.
I'd like
to hear an argument from someone who thought it was thought out well.
And CBA and everything else. Anyways, you can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website is www.illegalcurve.com. You can head there, click on merchandise. You can see the latest in Illegal Curve toques and headwear for the winter season.
Got some nice hats coming out, too. We'll talk about that next week.
Exactly.
They're really nice, but don't try putting them in the dryer because they shrink to like a quarter of the size. I put it on now. It's like a keeper.
Okay, Ezzy. Brian Munns sends out the following defensive pairings for the Jets tonight. Tobias Enstrom and Zach Bogosian, Johnny Oduya and Ron Hainsey, and Mark Stewart and Randy Jones. Leads me to this question. Why Jones over Mark Flood?
Fair question, Drew. You're dealing with... I actually was wondering that, especially against... I wonder that decision more so on Wednesday, Thursday than I did tonight, really, because Wednesday, Thursday, you're dealing with some really quick finesse teams, and Jones' main probably drawback is his speed, foot speed. He's not a great skater. So against Montreal and Toronto, I thought that was a weird match for them. I don't have as much of an issue with it tonight, although I like Flood in there for his right-handed shot, just a little bit more of the development factor. Your top defense pairing tonight being Bogosian and Enstrom.
Two guys who haven't been playing together much this year.
Stewart's been playing with Bogo most of the year.
And that's an interesting one. They've broken those guys up recently, and that's an interesting one. And, you know, you've really compartmentalized your defense pairings, right? Because that's your number one pairing, clearly. Your second pairing is clearly Oduya and Hainsey, and your third pairing is really clearly... Stewart and Jones, whoever plays with Jones. So it's interesting that they went down that road and they decided to break down the team this way. I'm not so sure that defense, I mean, obviously Byfuglien is missed, and apparently, according to the Free Press this morning, is not going to return on Tuesday, as suspected, and maybe out longer than they think.
A ways away, as Coach Noel likes to say.
And that's a huge hit for the Jets, not only in the defensive factor. I realize he has drawbacks defensively, but he plays big minutes. He's played very well recently. He gets a puck out of the zone. He's hard to get off the puck, and he contributes significantly to offense, and this team cannot produce offense for the life of them.
And I don't want to throw, once again, I mean...
You're throwing everybody under the bus.
No, but let's be honest. When you lose two games, 11-3, I mean...
When you're outscored 11-3,
Pardon me. When you lose two games and you're outscored 11-3, there's some major causes for concern, and I agree with Richie. When you've got Mark Flood, who's done an unbelievable job filling in for the injuries that they've had, when at the beginning of the year, when Enstrom was out and they had Hainsey out and all these guys out, Mark Flood came in, and with the job he did with the Manitoba Moose last year, no one was that surprised. Maybe people were surprised that he did that well. He was getting goals on the power play, but now people should not be surprised maybe over the last month of how he's played. And the thing, Drew, that I just want to say is that When Claude Noel said the reason, and he said something that he said, not that I'm putting in his mouth. He said the reason why he wanted to get Randy Jones back into the lineup,
hopefully it's just words,
is because he needs to get games, and he was healthy and he wanted to get him back in the lineup. Okay, but the problem is you have a guy in Mark Flood who's now been with the team almost the entire year. I think he's played almost 30 out of the 40 games. Don't quote me on that, but I think he's been in 30 games. And you've had a guy that's been there a lot more than Randy Jones, and now you're throwing up the chemistry of those defensive pairings with Byfuglien out. And Randy Jones is a guy that should be in the lineup. Randy Jones is the most effective at being a physical presence. And the Jets lack that. If you look at the goals, and once again, I'm not in the business of people throwing under the bus, but Johnny Oduya was on the ice for every single Leafs goal. And he had a very poor game. He had a cough up in the first period.
He's played awful. The past
and he had
awful.
A very bad game. And I
he
don't want to throw him
a little
him
bit up. Lost without Bufflin. He'd been playing with Bufflin, and he'd been playing well with Bufflin.
And him and Hainsey Drew don't complement each other well, because Hainsey is a guy.
I agree with that, Izzy.
Hainsey is a guy who's played very well this year, and he's a guy that is. You're almost putting guys that don't have complementary skills together, and that's why Oduya and Bufflin work together, because Oduya has that stay-at-home element, even though people, for some reason, like to think Oduya's a really offensive guy, which he isn't. He's a good skater, but Oduya's not physical. And when you look at when Bufflin isn't on the
neither
ice,
is Hainsey, really.
If you look at the goals, it's not all four goals that he was on the ice for. It's not like Oduya made four cough ups, even though Hainsey also made a cough up on that last goal to Grabowski.
Yeah, Hainsey played poorly in the.
He didn't play
too.
Well, but once again, I'm not throwing them under the bus. I'm just saying that one game against Toronto, and Montreal. I mean, the whole team played well. Toronto, I think, was more of a defensive collapse. But I think that those are things that maybe are things that have been. Maybe mismanaged on the part of Claude Noel in taking Flood out of the lineup and then not having the defensive
period. Let me ask you guys this. Who's the better defenseman right now? If you had to pick one or the other, who's the better defenseman, Mark Flood or Randy Jones?
I mean, I don't know if there's the biggest difference between the two of them. You're dealing with seventh defenseman, frankly.
Yeah.
But what I like the fact that Flood's a little bit younger, is a right-handed shot, moves a little bit better out there. And I think for some development, if you want to develop a cheaper option and a longer-term option, then I would give the nod to Flood. But coaches are in the business of winning hockey games here and now, and they don't seem to be as worried about the long-term in some senses. But let's talk about Buffalo for a second here. The Jets are going to get lucky tonight in that Derek Rowe got injured last night in the Carolina game.
Lost Mike Harrington about that.
Yes. And so
worth noting that Buffalo did play last night. This is the second half of a back-to-back. They played in Carolina last night. They traveled. I believe they beat Carolina. They lost to Carolina 4-2.
Stahl had 3 points.
Yeah, that's right.
So the Sabres are on the second half of a back-to-back.
They are on second half of back-to-back with travel, Drew.
Yeah.
That's obviously something that we should note. The Jets haven't won a game this year, and I believe they beat everybody they've played this year under those circumstances. One thing also to note is the fact that Tyler Myers returned to the lineup yesterday.
Yeah.
He's looked good. He played 23 minutes. He solidifies that defense to no end. Without him, they really do have a huge hole, literally and figuratively. And so, what the Jets have to deal with tonight is a team that's obviously underperformed this year, but a team that doesn't lack talent.
No,
in the least. But Ville Leino's coming back into the lineup tonight, a little bit more out of necessity, Mike Harrington says, and Coach Lindy Ruff says, than anything. But Roy's out, Leino's in. Brad Boys played last night. He's in. So, I mean, the biggest thing you have to do is you have to stop the horses on the team. And this year, the horses on the team have been Thomas Vanek.
Yep. Yeah.
And Jason Pominville.
Yep.
That's right.
And you got to be able to stop those two guys. And there's other guys who can hurt you. You know, there are guys like Nathan Gerby, and you have to stay disciplined against a guy like Patrick Kaleta. Drew Stafford hasn't had a great year, but I love his talent. He's a UND boy. UND's playing here tonight. Boys can score. And you have offense from the back end there a bit. This is a dangerous team, Drew, a team that's underperformed but doesn't lack for talent.
Certainly not. And, I mean, if you look at the standings, if you want to look at it in that sense, I mean, Buffalo is right now 3 points behind the Jets.
And they're desperate. I think at this point in the time, Drew, desperation trickles in.
Well, this is the 41st game for the Jets. I'm going to spend a lot of the second half of the show really going over sort of the halfway point of the season, looking back and looking forward. So this
Hold on,
is
are
the,
we going to do grades?
We're going to evaluate Drew's performance.
Are we going to do the Gary Lawless grades?
Sure, we'll do the Gary Lawless grades. Anyways, 41st game.
Let's do the Gary Lawless grades.
Yeah. Okay, we'll do the
and,
Gary
and
Lawless
grades. And by
the
way, now anytime we grade anything,
it's the Gary Lawless grade.
I understand, okay.
Yeah.
Jets
like
with
Tim is doing a great job. What do we give him under Gary Lawless grade?
I'd give Tim an A-plus under the Gary Lawless grade.
Okay, good.
Okay. Anyways, Winnipeg, I mean, the Jets win tonight. They're back up to, tied with Toronto, depending on what Toronto does and everything else. Yeah. So, Buffalo, they put 5 points between Buffalo and the Jets tonight with a win. If they lose, Buffalo's 1 point behind the Jets.
And if they lose, they play Boston on Tuesday.
Right.
Which is all right. If they win, they play Boston on Tuesday. But meaning if they lose tonight,
you're going 0-4 on the road trip.
With a goal differential of plus 69 halfway through the season.
Yeah. I mean, Boston is a juggernaut. And frankly, somebody made a point, the entire NHL season might be for naught at this point. Just give the Stanley Cup back to Boston the way they're playing.
There's a pretty good team there in New York, and there's a pretty good team there in Chicago and Detroit and Vancouver.
Vancouver's
I'm being a little tongue-in-cheek when I say that.
definitely being
true. You get a B minus for that comment.
Thank you.
A Gary Lawless B minus.
You're often tongue in cheek. I'm often foot in mouth. Yeah, so there you go. I think with Buffalo, I think where they are right now is almost deceiving, because if you look at them since the Milan Lucic hit, and I definitely want to ask Mike Harrington about this, and you guys know that I want to ask him about this, because Ryan Miller, speaking of guys being thrown under the bus, Jeremy Roenick threw Ryan Miller under the bus.
Did he?
Hardcore. But, I mean, he hasn't been the same guy. Ryan Miller hasn't played well. And when you look at the two teams maybe with the best goalies that have benefited from those goalies are New York and Buffalo.
Jeremy Roenick sure has done a lot of talking for his career for a guy who didn't do as much as he could have.
Yeah.
Well, what do you mean Roenick is under the bus?
What do you mean by that comment? What do you mean he didn't do as much as he could have?
How'd that guy ever win?
So you're just saying, you know, he's a talker.
No Stanley Cups for that guy.
Yeah, I mean, it was on the 96 World Cup team, right? But come on. I mean, like, he didn't win anything else. Top guy in a bunch of teams, talked his way off a bunch of teams.
He doesn't have the best reputation in the
Jeremy
hockey
Roenick
world.
Jeremy Roenick can zip it once in a while. I've had enough of his, you know, telling people this and that. Well, where's Jeremy Roenick? That guy shrunk.
It's funny. I would...
Shrunk under the spotlight, you're saying.
Why didn't you take Philly to past Tampa Bay in 2004? You know, where were you on those Phoenix teams that couldn't get it done?
I really hope we get Jeremy Roenick on the line.
Take it easy, Jeremy. Take it easy, throwing everybody under the bus. You weren't exactly Gretz out there.
Before we go to break, just a quick comment from you about the fact that today, right now, Boston and Vancouver are playing a rematch of the Stanley Cup Final. Not available anywhere on national TV, either in the U.S. or in Canada.
That's a shame.
What do you mean? I thought it was on CBC is showing Philadelphia, Ottawa.
No, CBC is not showing any game. There's two Canadian teams playing right now, not available.
Well, center ice.
Center ice, but people don't have center ice.
Drew, that's a premier matchup between the two best teams in both conferences, and it's a rematch of the finals that has to be on TV for the national audience to watch. And we can just update the fans that Boston has tied it up.
You could make a very strong argument, Drew, that both of those teams, similar to Detroit and Pittsburgh, will be back in the Stanley Cup Finals. The way those two teams are playing now, two good goalies on Vancouver, two good goalies on Boston, and, I mean, not a lot has changed on either team as far as your key players. You can make a strong argument. We'll see that again.
It's a shame that game's not available on national television, both here in Canada and in the United States. 1-1 with 5 minutes to go in the first period there. We'll keep you updated on that throughout. Much more on the Jets Sabres coming up. Birchwood Chevrolet Buick, GMC Game Day here on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for more. Welcome back to the program. Birchwood Chevrolet Buick, GMC Game Day. 6 o'clock puck drop in Buffalo between the Jets and the Sabres. 5 o'clock, the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show with Rick Ralph. And 3 o'clock, Hustler and not Lawless.
So, Drew, if it's Buick GMC Chevrolet Game Day...
It's not Buick. Oh, Birchwood Chevrolet Buick
Birchwood,
GMC
Chevrolet,
Game Day.
That's why you're not the hostess.
Birchwood. Say it along with me. Birchwood Chevrolet Buick. GMC.
What do you mean it's not Buick? It's Buick. Okay, so does that mean you get a Chevrolet?
Well done.
You get a Chevrolet, I get a Buick, I get a GMC. What does Tim get? We're each getting a car, right?
And I get a car in that.
Can we just cut Ezzy's mic? That would be easier than having to go over that one more time. Thanks very much. Anyways, welcome back to the program.
I need a new car.
You can tweet at us at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Sorry, Matt, I don't want to forget about you. Matt, we have Matt who's interning from Red River. We should also get Matt a car.
Matt needs a car too. We should each get
a new car. Maybe one of those electric cars. Sorry, Drew, you're getting upset. Continue on.
Thank you. I have to get through some certain promos, and then you can chatter on with your inane ramblings. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been the Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. I happen to know the comedian tonight is a very funny comedian hypnotist named Incredible Boris.
I've seen Incredible Boris.
So
Incredible Boris hypnotized me.
Yes.
He got me off of salami for 2 years.
I think it's fitting that Ezzy talks right during the Rumors segment because he is the funniest one.
No, hold on. No. You're funny, Richie, and Drew's also funny.
You're the funniest guy in the station, period.
Yeah, by far.
Everybody pales in comparison to you with respect to humor.
It's true. Anyways, Incredible Boris is at Rumors tonight. If you've never seen Incredible Boris, definitely worth checking out.
Isn't your grandmother named Incredible Doris?
Her name.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you guys are hilarious, I'll tell you what. Anyways, two show times tonight at Rumors, 7:45 and 10:30.
She hypnotized Drew to only eat salami.
Call the club, 488-4520. Let's talk about the Jets, Sabres. If you can point to one thing of the Sabres, where's their, they've obviously been struggling this year, and they spent a boatload of money in free agency.
Yep.
Where is their struggles? Why have they been struggling? Where can the Jets exploit tonight?
Well, it's funny, Drew, you try and think of a Sabres identity, and you really can't. And I think that's been their problem all year, is that they don't have that identity. They have a bunch of guys together. They haven't yet been able to forge some kind of, you know, we are this team. This is why you're scared of us. Their goaltending has been spotty. Obviously, on the back end, they've had some injuries. They've fit some guys in there, you know, Regier's first year. And on offense, they've had guys who've been struggling, guys who generally produce, like a Derek Roy, have not been doing that. So you still have a fear of the team because overall the roster talent is exceptional, really. And usually it's a hard-nosed style with a guy, with a team like led by Lindy Ruff.
Yep.
But overall, you're playing a team that seems a bit lost, Drew, and you don't want to be the team. And this is what Noel's going to be saying, I bet, in the locker room. You don't want to be the team that lets them get back on track, especially because they're 3 points behind the Jets in the playoff race.
Let me ask you this question, then. If you look at this roster, what should their identity be?
A really good, solid top four defense, and maybe lacking a little bit on the depth factor.
Yep.
Solid top four defense, an Olympic goalie, and an amazing array of offensive talent. But you look at the protection this year, their third leading scorer, Drew, has 24 points.
And to continue Richie's point here, I do think that they lack an identity. And when you go out and, you know, you've got Terry Pegula, who it's clear he bought the team and he said, I'm going to spend a little bit of money here.
A little bit more than just a little bit.
And the thing is, when you look at who he got, okay, Ville Leino, he might have overpaid a little bit. And you can make that argument. He's been bad.
A little bit would be an understatement.
And same thing with Christian Ehrhoff, who is good offensively, but look who he was playing with. Ehrhoff isn't exactly, you know, not playing with some good players there. He's playing passing to the Sedins.
And he's injured now.
82 games a year, and he's injured, and he will be out for a couple weeks. But, Drew, I think to answer your question, though, without getting into kind of what's gone wrong with their identity, I think the problems are what Richie touched on a little bit there on the back end. You've got Ehrhoff out, and you've got Sequeira out, who are two guys that have been huge for them this year. Yep. Well, Ehrhoff's a new guy, but Sequeira's been on the Sabres, for quite a while now, and he's a good defensive player. You've got a guy in Braden McNabb, and you've got a guy in Marc-Andre Gragnani, two guys who are both young guys, and that's where I think the Jets can capitalize when you get into some matchups with those guys who aren't particularly physical guys. Marc-Andre Gragnani, this is his first year in the league.
Poor defensively. He's offensively proficient and very poor defensively.
That's where you take advantage. For the Jets, they can. This is a team right now in the second game of back-to-backs, like you've mentioned, and the Jets have shown that killer instinct for teams that are maybe not the most well-rested. But, on the other hand, in Toronto and Montreal, the Jets were well rested. We've been hearing that the flu's been going around and Tim Stapleton's going to miss the game, and we're not sure if Burmistrov also had the flu. But regardless, that's something that you have to fight through. That doesn't excuse an entire team. So the Jets can take advantage of a Bruins team that has some injuries. We didn't even really talk that much about Derek Roy because I watched that game and I think he was injured in the third. So we'll get confirmation.
In the first.
So we'll get confirmation on it from Mike Harrington, but we know that he won't be in the lineup.
Yep.
Tyler Myers is back, but you've still got some holes. When you've got a 20-year-old Braden McNabb, in there playing
20 minutes a game.
He's averaging 18 minutes a game.
There you go. Yeah. He's only played 17 games this year in spot duty, really. So they can take advantage of the Sabres here. The Sabres are in a weak position and have been really struggling since that Milan Lucic incident.
You know, Ezzy, they've had injuries too. And then the Tyler Ennis injury, I love him as a player. He's go, go, go. He's got a nonstop motor.
Yep.
He obviously has had ankle problems all year. And he's been on the sidelines. And you've had other guys. Jogan Hecht came back later in the season after starting the season with an injury, and they've had other guys who've incurred injuries, Leino. So there's been no shortage of injury issues in Buffalo. Having said that, you know, and you can point to the injury issues, but having said that, a guy like Drew Stafford, an ultra-talented player, guys who had a breakout season last year, has 22 points in 39 games, has 7 goals after breaking out last year in the goal-scoring department. You know, that needs to be improved. You have guys, maybe a guy, you know, offensive guys like Leino. He's played 29 games. He has 10 points. They signed him to be a good passer. So they have not been able to forge an identity. They've also had a complete lack of production from their offensive, firepower. And obviously, Ryan Miller's had the struggles this year. So, kind of everything that can go wrong has gone wrong. It's been a little bit of a Murphy's Law for Buffalo this year. But it's a testament to their talent, Ezzy, that they're so close to the playoff race, and they really haven't played well at all.
Right.
And that's the part that should worry Jets fans.
That should worry everybody in the NHL.
Exactly. This is a team that once they do finally get to, and you know, there is something that could say, you know, it takes a while for, you know, they got some new pieces in there, obviously, in you know, like you said, in Erhoff and Regier. Once these guys finally get to put it together and Ryan Miller returns, as we assume, returns to being Ryan Miller.
Oh, he'll be back to Ryan Miller.
This is not a team you want to meet. This is a team that could very easily pick it up and now we're in the second half of the season.
I will say this about the team this tonight, if you're looking for a weakness for them. Very weak up the middle tonight. Especially, they're not great up the middle, period. With Derek Roy out, the Jets centers have to take advantage. Brian Little's back in the lineup tonight.
Yep.
Well, you know, you have Antropov playing center. You have to take advantage of that team up the middle.
Who are the centers on this team? Who's the number one center right now?
Luke Adam?
Jochen Hecht has been playing with Vanek and Pominville.
Okay, there you go then.
Well, but anytime you're talking about Jochen Hecht as your number one center,
He's been a staple on the Sabres for 10 years. I mean, he's one of those guys, Drew. The way I look at that line, and you know, Richie mentioned this for the Jets, and once again, I usually do agree with Richie because he's usually right. This is another team. It's been one line. I mean, okay, Ville Leino, it might come back. We'll have to ask Mike Harrington about that. It's coming up right away. He might be back tonight.
No, he's back tonight.
He is back
confirmed,
tonight. Okay.
Do you expect?
But even with that, those guys are—they're not getting it done. It's not like those guys were contributing, Drew, and now they're out of the lineup. Same thing with the Jets. If they were to lose a guy like an Alexander Burmistrov, which they are tonight, someone's still got to pick up that offense because Burmistrov hasn't been lighting it up. So when you have guys that aren't producing and there's injuries, it's different. If you're really filling a void, other guys must step up. That's all there is to it.
I haven't seen Buffalo play much this year. So, I mean, you asked about the centers. Haven't seen them play lately. Luke Adam's probably their best offensive center. But, you know, Mike Harrington mentions that Leino and Brad Boyes are both going to have to log some time at center tonight with Derek Roy's injury. So they're weak up the middle. Brad Boyes is not the fastest skater. So I think if the Ladd line gets up against that pairing, they can take advantage of a little bit of the foot speed there. And there's some advantages that the Jets can take, and you're playing a team on the second half of a back-to-back. This is a winnable game. I don't think people should look at it otherwise. It's a winnable game.
Yep.
You know what? You don't want to say a must-win game because it's the middle of the season and it's only one game.
You can't go 0-4 on this road trip.
Yeah. You don't want to go into Boston, losers of three in a row.
You know, and with all due respect to the Jets and their talent level, you would expect that Boston would beat them 9.5 times out of 10.
Well, Drew, when you have Boston beating the Flames 9-0, it's funny. I was listening to, I'm not going to say who, but I was listening to a conversation about goal scoring being down in the NHL, and then I just thought to myself, did you watch the Boston-Calgary game? Or, for that matter, any team that Boston has played this year?
Well, Boston's a juggernaut. I mean, do you expect to see Enstrom and Bogosian up against the Pominville-Vanek line?
Yeah, I think that's to be assumed, Drew. That's the top pairing against the top. I don't mind the designation of a top pairing. They're against that top line.
Well, it's a pretty clear top pairing.
Yeah, and exactly. And I don't mind that. I think that needs to happen as opposed to kind of the mishmash they have of the six guys. I like Bogosian against a guy like Vanek because Vanek's a big guy who can skate, and Bogosian is the same. You know, there's a lot to like about that matchup for the Jets, but also it's going to be a dangerous one. So Vanek is a guy you don't want to wake up. He can get sleepy at times, and it's been a productive season for him. So it's interesting. That'll be an interesting matchup and one that the Jets will need to focus on, and one that Claude Noel and, more importantly, Charlie Huddy will need to make sure is always in place against this team. I know line matching is more difficult on the road.
Right.
So it's something that the coaches are going to have to be very cognizant of.
And we should be surprised if some of these guys step up today, Drew, because I believe Bogosian is close to Buffalo, right?
Mm-hmm. And good point.
And as well, Hainsey is from Connecticut. So, I mean, there's all these guys that have reason to get up even more so for this game.
That's right. Hainsey said yesterday on the show that Buffalo's too far for his family, but Boston. And remember, when he went to the New York trip, he didn't play any of those games.
That's right.
The Boston will be his first, I think, family debut game.
Exactly. Even though his dad, was at the
game
in New Jersey.
Nice guy.
Very nice guy. Exactly. Yeah. Anyways, that's still to come here on TSN 1290. 6 o'clock puck drop, Jets and Sabres. When we come back on the other side of the break, Mike Harrington from the Buffalo News is going to join us. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. 1 hour down, or a little more than 1 hour, I guess. We started early. 2 hours to go. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
And we've scared away Matt.
Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day here with the Jets Sabres puck drop at 6 p.m.
Say that 10 times fast.
I do. I'd say it all the time. Let's go
live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
And let's welcome back to the program. He's a frequent guest of ours. He's Mike Harrington from the Buffalo News. Mike, welcome back to the program. Thanks for joining us.
No problem, gentlemen. I'm glad the folks from Winnipeg brought some good weather with them. 50 degrees and sunny in Buffalo on January 7th. Who'd have thunk it?
Just a typical beautiful day in upstate New York, right?
So, Mike, will you have a Hawaiian shirt on in the press box then?
I'm telling you, I'm starting to think about what the attire needs to be tonight. I mean, I actually had to consider, should I be mowing the lawn? Should I be raking leaves? I mean, these are easy problems that I have to deal with compared to what Lindy Ruff and the Sabres are dealing with, so I'll take my end of it.
And don't blame you at all. And let's start with some of those problems that Lindy Ruff is facing. The Sabres on the second half of a back-to-back. They lost last night in Carolina. You know, Darcy Regier told the Buffalo News that the team isn't in need of a shakeup. If they're not in need of a shakeup, what are the Sabres in need of?
Boy, if they're not in need of a shakeup, I don't think any of us have watched any hockey in our lives. Right now, they have continued to say to themselves, we're okay, we're just struggling because of injuries. Eventually, our scorers will put the puck in the net. Eventually, our injured guys will come back. Eventually, Ryan Miller will make a key save or two. I think they're kidding themselves, but their history has shown two things. Darcy Regier generally only makes trades at the trade deadline, and they've been a very good second half in January team in recent years. And I think they're banking on history to repeat itself again, but that's really a slippery slope. They had a great run last year, but that team got a tremendous boost from Terry Pegula's ownership. And I don't see that event coming this year that's going to propel them. And these guys are all mostly underachieving. Right now, they're a mess.
Mike, I think it was yourself that wrote the article in the Buffalo News about how Lindy Ruff is going to start to play Ryan Miller more. If it wasn't, I apologize.
Yes, it was.
It was yourself. And, yeah. I mean, do you think, I mean, I know Ryan Miller's, you know, taking a lot of flack, and I think it's undeserved because, like you said, we're expecting him to start playing better. But has he really been the same goalie since that concussion, since he was hit by Milan Lucic? What do you think?
No, I mean, I think there's no question about it that, you know, he has not been the same guy, that he's not, maybe not even 100%. He started the year 4-1. His goals against was about 1.6. His save percentage was .950 those first five games. He started slumping at the end of October, and then he got hurt, and he hasn't been the same guy since. And now his save percentage is under .900. He's over three goals a game. He's not even in the top 30 in the league. Realistically, though, the Olympics are 23 months ago now. He really has had one great career year, and that was it. He's had a certain level of play that he's maintained. His numbers last year were about where they should be. This is a drop-off year. He's also 31 years old and has had two concussions in 9 months. So for the first time in his career, there's a lot of question marks surrounding Ryan Miller if he can be the franchise goalie for this team going forward.
Like, you know, you look at a guy like Ville Leino brought in, and we can talk about his struggles in a second. At least there's an adjustment factor that he has to deal with. But how do you explain the lack of production from a guy who broke out last year and has loads of talent in Drew Stafford?
It's hard. It's really hard to explain. You know, he's been very frustrated. The one thing I think you have to look at the numbers of Stafford last year had a 31-goal season, then he gets a 4-year, $16 million contract afterwards. Mm-hmm. Those 31 goals, 18 of them came in 7 games. He had 4 hat-tricks and 3 2-goal games. So that was a bit of a mirage of a 30-goal season, if there is such a thing. He's getting to the net. He's not putting the puck in. That's what he's paid to do. It's real simple at this point. He's not alone. There's a lot of guys in this team getting paid to put the puck in the net, and the only guys really doing it with any regularity are Thomas Vanek and Jason Pominville, and you see the results.
And there's certainly a huge disparity between Pominville, Vanek, and the next leading scorer on the team, and that's Derek Roy. You know, what can we come to expect from Derek Roy now? He only played 35 games last year because of injury. He's played 40 already this year, but only 24 points. You know, what's his ceiling?
You injured last night.
You know, we really think that Derek Roy suffered a torn quad last year right before Christmas, and he has not been the same player since. And they tell you that's an injury almost like the trauma of an auto accident. And he has not played very well. He has not scored. And now he's out again. He was injured last night on a face-off in Carolina. They expect him, it sounds like, to be out a week or two with some sort of arm-shoulder thing, so he's not playing tonight. And that really leaves them thin. He's their number one offensive center, and now he's out of the lineup. They just did not fill the need this club had of a top center in the offseason. It's really biting them now.
Mike, who's Braden McNabb?
Well, you know what? People said he was a great prospect, and we believe that talk from talking to people who follow the Western Hockey League, and he's really been a find for them now on defense. He's a great old-school kind of hitter. You know, you don't see a lot of the great hitting in the league anymore, but he really likes to take the body. He's done a great job. He's earned a spot in this club, and you know, when Ehrhoff and Sakara come back, they have a tough decision to make here, but he's played very well, and right now, you know, he's one of these guys. They have a lot of guys in the pipeline for the future they're very high on, and they've gotten much more out of him at the NHL level this year than they ever expected.
The guy I'm pretty high on, Mike Tyler Ennis, out of the WHL as well. Really explosive player. Obviously, ankle injury at the beginning of the season. Has that just hindered him all year and not allowed him to take the next step?
Yeah, it really has. I mean, he's, you know, he's only got 3 goals. He had 20 last year. People thought he could be a 20 to 30 goal guy, and mm-hmm. you know, he keeps skating a day or two and having setbacks. I think he played 4 or 5 games. He hurt it again in mid-December in Pittsburgh. Now he's back on week to week again instead of day to day. He just has not been able to shake this high ankle sprain, is what they continue to call it. And you wonder if, you know, they need to take another x-ray or bone scan or something to see if there's something else going on there, because he's just not been able to skate with any regularity here for almost going on 3 months.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News. Jets Sabres gets underway 6 o'clock tonight on TSN 1290. Mike, this is one of the acquisitions in the offseason was Robin Ruggieri, came over from Calgary. How has he fit into this team? What's his impact been like with on this roster?
He's been really a find for them. He's been physical. He's been good positionally. I don't look at Robin Ruggieri's plus-minus as a real issue. He's, I think, minus 11 or 12, and he's played against everybody's top lines. And a guy like Marc-Andre Grignani, a kid who gives the puck away, is plus 12 because he's not playing against top lines, and the goaltending doesn't save anybody here. Ruggieri has given them positive impact on the physical side. He's a positive influence in the locker room, a veteran influence. He's really been a piece they didn't have that they really needed. So out of their 3 offseason acquisitions, Ehrhoff was starting to play better before he got hurt. Leno, to this point, has not done much. Ruggieri has really been solid.
Mike, Jason Pominville's playing in his 500th game tonight, and obviously he was made captain this year. How do you think he's handled it, or, you know, how do you think he's done this year in his first year, as you know, first year wearing the C on his chest?
Well, on the ice, obviously, production-wise, he's had a really terrific season, and, you know, I think he could be a Lady Byng candidate by the end of the year. As far as the captain goes, you know, it's hard to say. A lot of people, I think, wanted to see more of a fire and brimstone kind of personality in that role. There aren't a lot of those in the Buffalo locker room, and that's one of the problems. Maybe a lot of people thought Vanek might be better in that role because he's kind of taken on the mantle as a top player on this club. Pominville's respected. He had a meeting right before Christmas with the team on the ice after practice, really trying to get them going and understand what they needed to do when they came back. And, you know, I think he's respected in the room. I don't think he's the kind of captain fans think they need, but I think fans here are kind of coming to the realization now that it's not about kicking these guys in the behind to get them going. They're just not talented enough. They're not good enough. We're halfway through the season. I think the Buffalo Sabres are what they are at this point.
Mike, I guess that brings the question, Lindy Ruff, and coming into the season, the expectations were maybe higher than they'd ever been, maybe dating back to the Sabres' run against Carolina that year when they had a bunch of injuries and probably should have made the Cup final. Is this his type of team? And I mean that from the sense of the roster provided to him.
You know, he's adjusted, and he had, you know, great plugger teams in the 90s that really lived off Dominik Hasek. He had great speed teams after the lockout when the rules changed, and he's kind of rode Ryan Miller. And, you know, it's one of these situations where, you know, the injuries are what they are, and I understand that. And, you know, in most cities by now, the coach would be on the hot seat, if not already fired, given the expectation and the payroll and that. But, you know, Ruff has the very public support of Terry Pegula, the owner, and Ted Black, the president. Darcy Ruggieri, the GM, is not firing Lindy Ruff. They are basically joined at the hip. So it's an unusual situation. But I certainly sense more frustration from Lindy than any time I've dealt with him, that he knows this team needs to be better, and he's a little, you know, he doesn't know what to do. He's tried to mix lines, sometimes too much mixing in my mind. And, you know, at times, what can you do, though, when, you know, every other day you turn around, there's somebody else getting hurt? They're basically playing every night with at least 5 guys out, and the most they've had this year is 9. You tell me which team is going to be in a playoff spot with that kind of impact from injuries.
We spoke about Ryan Miller and his concussion problems, and when he was out, Jonas Enroth came in and he played very well for the Sabres. How much longer do they keep going with Miller before at some point in time they just say, you know, he's not doing it, and Enroth has to, we have to give Enroth the shot?
Well, that's an interesting question, you know, because, you know, Lindy came out this week and said we're going to ride Miller. One of the reasons he said that is because Enroth is, I think, 1-6-3 in his last 10 decisions. Enroth has really tailed off. The let's make Enroth the number one guy sentiment has kind of dropped here in the last few weeks. He played very well last week against Ottawa. made, I think, 43, 44 saves after the Senators hit the post four times in the first period, lost that game in a shootout. So that was a step forward for him, but he doesn't seem ready to handle the day-to-day grind of being a starting goalie. I think at this point, they're going to sink or swim. They're going to ride their $6 million goalie and see if they can get into the playoffs. But, you know, unless Miller starts playing better, it's not going to happen. They had a two-on-one last night where Robin Regier had the pass covered. Miller has to take the shooter. He gives up a goal, gets beaten clearly for the game-winning goal of the third period against Carolina. And, you know, here's the number for you guys. 15 of the last 18 games he's played in, Ryan Miller has given up three or more goals. Wow. You're just not winning that way.
Wow. Mike, there's been some, you know, crazy rumors. Apparently Bobby Ryan, Ryan Getzlaff, and Corey Perry are going to both the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Buffalo Sabres. So, you know, aside from, you know, those rumors, you know, what do the Buffalo Sabres need to acquire if they're in a position that they're a buyer close to the trade deadline, in your opinion?
Oh, the number one thing the Buffalo Sabres need to acquire is Ryan Getzlaff, let me tell you.
Okay, so you are believing the hype, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they need a number one center, and I think there's a lot of guys on both teams who could use a change of scenery. I think Ryan Getzlaff may be one of those guys in Anaheim who needs a change of scenery. Bobby Ryan certainly could. If you could get a number one center in here, that's the move Darcy Regier needs to make, and if he needs to give up, you know, a top prospect, if he needs to give up Drew Stafford, if he needs to give up Ryan Miller, he needs to get a number one center in here. They didn't do it in the offseason, and it's come back to bite him now. I would think that's the move. Bob Murray's been very public about it, and I know they've had some talks with Anaheim about that situation, and we'll see how it comes down. But again, Regier's history is he only makes deals at the deadline. I don't think they can wait another 6 weeks to make a deal here.
Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News, as always, we thank you for your time. Thanks for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Enjoy the game tonight.
All right, gentlemen, thank you. And I'm holding
Thanks
you to some warm weather when I get to Winnipeg in a couple
Have fun mowing your lawn today, Mike.
All right.
No problem, Mike. We'll be sure to put that on the schedule.
All right.
Take care, Mike Harrington. Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. Before we go to break, not hockey-related, but for Winnipeg Blue Bombers fans, an important note. Hamilton Tiger Cats have hired George Cortez to be their new head coach. That might mean Tim Burke comes back to Winnipeg as the defensive coordinator. So hopefully that means Tim Burke is back and the Bombers can continue what they were doing with the strong defense of last season.
Mike Harrington was nails in that interview. Yeah. That's great insight into the entire Sabres lineup. But sorry, Drew, I want to go. I always go right back to hockey.
We'll never let Drew go to Hamilton. Maybe Kentucky, but not Hamilton.
Yeah. There you go. Anyways, let's go to break. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Much more is still to come. When we come back, we're going to give away some UND Clarkson College tickets. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And, of course, the website is www.illegalcurve.com. Following up on our point right before the break, according to Adam Wozny on Twitter, he says that the Winnipeg Blue Bombers have confirmed defensive coordinator Tim Burke will be in Winnipeg next season. So that's great news for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers fans. Let's give away some tickets to tonight's University of North Dakota Clarkson College game.
And we're going to do some trivia.
Trivia question. You have to answer the trivia question. And you call into Michael Remus at 780-1290. 780-1290 if you know the answer to the following question.
Oh, God.
What do Mark Chipman and Richard Pollock have in common? 780-1290, area code 204-780-1290. If you've been listening to the show at all, we make fun of Richard a fair bit for this, for what he does for a day job. Yeah. What do him and
That's
Mark,
a good hint. It has to do with Richard's day job.
What do him
Why
and Mark
am I being included in this?
And no member of the Pollock or Manukes families can call in.
What do Richard and Mark Chipman have in common? 780-1290. Let's talk about a little bit more about the Sabres Jets game tonight, 6 o'clock puck drop here on TSN 1290 with Brian Munns, Shane Knighty, and Dennis Bayak, of course.
Well, let's quickly first talk about the end of what Mike Harrington was talking about, and that was the acquisition of a possible acquisition by the Sabres of a player of Ryan Getzlaff's quality. I've always held Ryan Getzlaff in the highest esteem. I think he's arguably one of the top few centers in the National Hockey League. I love what he brings to the table. He's got a good shot. He's a beautiful passer. He's big.
The only problem is he's from Regina.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, he's, he's as good as it gets.
I know we have fans in Saskatchewan. He's as good as it gets.
I know he's not having a great year.
My grandmother was from Saskatchewan.
He's as good as it gets.
Stop talking. I'm serious.
He's as good as it gets in terms of centers in the National Hockey League. But, you know, if you look at a team, and, you know, it's funny because you always hear the Leafs in whenever it's a rumor about a star player, the Leafs are involved. And it's always funny because the Leafs have nobody to trade. So whenever the Leafs are involved, don't take it seriously. Now, the Sabres, though, out of all the teams you think about, the Sabres have a lot of young talent. They got a lot of offensive depth. They got a lot of, you know, a lot in the system. They are the kind of team that matches up perfectly with the team looking to trade a superstar. Now, if I were Bob Murray, I mean, Ryan Getzlaf, guys like that don't come along very often, and I wouldn't trade him personally. But if you're going to trade him, then a team like Buffalo can give you like a Drew Stafford and maybe a Gerby and a defenseman or an Ennis. There's a lot of talent there. You know, and if you're trading a superstar, you better get a heck of a lot of talent back. That could be a match. And if I am Darcy Regier, and at some point, guys, and we talk about it there, you know, you always want to compete, but at some point you got to make the big move. And Darcy Regier has generally been trigger shy, and there's nothing wrong with that. He's developed good teams year after year. But if a guy like that is actually available, give up a little more to get him.
He's also never had the ability to really take on a contract of that size.
Yeah.
So now with that, the purse strings have been opened up by new owner Terry Pegula. If you can get Ryan Getzlaf and it costs you Drew Stafford,
hold on.
I'm more than Drew Stafford.
Hold on. If we're talking, I know we're getting off.
If you can get
topic.
Ryan Getzlaf, you get him.
No, hold on. You're right. You're not going to get an argument from Richie or I. The problem is here. If we're getting a little off topic, because I know you
me, that would be or me not
or time. Sorry me myself.
The
and
one
I
time read. You use I, it's in the wrong context.
I sometimes get my I's and E's confused. But the thing is, when we're talking about Ryan Getzlaf, I'm sorry, Drew. The Sabres don't have any combination of players to trade for Ryan Getzlaf. You can throw out first round draft picks. The old adage, and it's always true. And you talked about this with the Joe Thornton trade. You can even throw in Tyler Myers there. You can throw anybody on the Sabres team you want. The Anaheim Ducks aren't getting anything back from the Sabres that's better than Ryan Getzlaf. Ryan Getzlaf is in the prime of his career. And, you know, everyone is looking at Bob Murray coming out and saying, we're not going to trade anybody, but the only untouchables are Timu Solani and Saku Koivu. Well, for Winnipeg Jets fans, you should stop listening right there, because the only guy we want from them is Timu Solani, right?
And by the way,
it's a joke, Drew. But
no trade clauses. If those guys want to move, they'll move.
If Timu Solani goes to Bob Murray and says, trade me, he'll trade him.
You better be getting a number one forward, a young, emerging number one forward, or a number one defenseman, because the problem on Anaheim is they've had a void since Pronger and Niedermeyer.
Yeah, that's right.
They always could rely on those top two defensemen, Drew. So you're going to, no offense to Drew Stafford, who, by the way, did go to UND. You're going to have to do a lot better than Drew Stafford when you're talking the Ryan Getzlaf. Ryan Getzlaf, he's a top five center in the league.
But let me ask you this. You're talking about a guy with a piece of the pie, but you just mentioned Drew Stafford signs a $4 million per year deal. I mean, look at what Ryan Getzlaf makes as compared to that when you're taking on other salary and you think to yourself, well, it better be cheap talent than if they're trading Ryan Getzlaf.
Drew,
I don't know what you
trade. From the Anaheim Ducks perspective, you're not going to win a trade. And keep in mind, Ryan Getzlaf isn't a guy who's in his mid-30s. He's 27, I believe. He's in the prime. I mean, he's got no injury problems.
He's got 2 years left, this year and next year left on his contract. So, I mean, that's a factor, and he's a pending UFA. So maybe that's a factor. But he makes $5.3 million, guys.
But, Richie, Drew Stafford, Tyler Myers in a first-round pick isn't worth it to trade Getzlaf. You'd agree with that. Or what? Any other combo you can come up with.
Well, Tyler Myers is a different story if you get him involved. But I think anybody else, I mean, you have to get a huge load. And I just don't know if it's worth it. And just to have a core of those three guys together, in reality, for under $16 million, it's a lot easier, guys, to get... This is the point, guys. It's a lot easier to get complementary pieces, second line, third line, and defense, you know, and depth players when you really do have a good goalie in terms of talent. It's a lot easier to do that than it is to get the superstars.
That's why it doesn't make any sense why they would trade him in the first place.
So that's why, exactly.
I thought getting rid of Randy Carlyle was the solution to all their problems.
Well, I don't think Getzlaf. I think it was Bobby Ryan.
It was for Bobby Ryan.
This is a sunk season. If you're going to trade anybody, and I still don't even think they should trade this guy. It's got to be Ryan.
I don't think you trade any of them, Ezzy.
Or anybody.
Why would you?
When you have Ryan Getzlaf, Corey Perry,
guys, Ryan
Getzlaf, the best
26
players,
years
it doesn't
old.
Make sense.
He's 26 years Who, old.
How often in the NHL do you ever acquire three players of that talent on the same team?
Exactly right.
San Jose, Joe Thornton.
Yeah, but they got Joe Thornton because Boston made a terrible trade.
Michael Conley.
One of the worst trades of the last 20 years.
So, I mean, you know, it's what we said. We said this when we were having breakfast this morning. We said if they trade Getzlaf or Perry or Ryan, all you're going to get is the Boston Bruins, is what the Bruins got for Thornton, and that was one of the worst trades in NHL history. You just can't trade those. You can never trade a superstar and get equal return. How often does it happen?
You're right.
Only if you're trading superstar for superstar.
If ever.
How often does a trade work out that well that you get equal return
rarely,
on that?
Rarely.
I mean, exactly. It doesn't make any sense. You know, why would you bother? You know, you call this a lost year. You get a top 10 draft pick.
No, you do.
Top five draft pick.
You call last year. You draft a defenseman.
Yeah.
Likely. I mean, you don't only draft for need, but you draft a defenseman. And then you trade all your guys and try and get as many little small draft pick assets as you can get back. And you splurge a little bit in free agency to get it back. And then you try and drive the bus next year with the best top line in hockey when they're actually going.
And Richie,
I agree. I don't think you make the move. And I know Bob Murray likes to threaten. But Bob Murray, let's be real here, guys. I mean, Bob Murray...
He makes that job always threatening because his own job security.
Yeah, because of the fact that he can't add the easier pieces to add in the National Hockey League. That's second, that's third and fourth line depth.
Getzlaff's not going anywhere.
None of those guys should go anywhere. It doesn't make any sense. You have three superstars. You have a very good goaltender in Hiller. You need some defense. You need some defensemen. You can get these things in the free agent market. You can get these things in through the draft. Yep. I'll tell you what. I would take being in Anaheim's position over pretty much any other team that's towards the bottom of the league right now. No questions asked. It's an easy decision.
Because you tank, you have three top talents, you tank, you have a good draft pick, you add them with Cam Fowler on the back. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, it's just
Anaheim Ducks aren't rebuilding. They're not rebuilding. Well, they're going through a stage where they have to improve dramatically.
When your three best forwards are under 27 years old, I mean, I don't know why you would.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you got the Devontae Smith-Pelly still. I mean, you got some talent there that's going to develop.
It's not
going
to be tough next year for the Ducks to be back where they were last year.
Yeah.
When you have that talent, it would be, often thing, we were talking about this a little bit with the NHL realignment plan being a little bit short-sighted. That would be short-sighted to get rid of any one of those guys. They don't come along very often.
And the Ducks' underlying numbers last year were poor, and so a poor season this year wasn't completely unpredictable. Having said that, again, you need to address the lower lines and those issues because the top line and those guys can carry the play. And you get better. You know, you get the top line playing again really well. You get Jonas Hiller back to his old form.
Yep.
You know, that's no guarantee by any means. And then you address it through the draft and through some free agency, and it's a lot easier to get it turned around. I agree. There's no reason to blow it all up.
Before we go to commercial break, and we have Randy Hahn, the San Jose Sharks play-by-play guy, coming on in the next segment. Worth noting, in that Boston-Vancouver game, Milan Lucic was thrown out of the game, given a game misconduct. It's yet to be determined. He apparently left the bench during there was a line brawl. He left the bench during the altercation. It's yet to be determined if it was on a legal line change or an illegal line change. If the NHL deems it that he left the bench on an illegal line change, it's a 10-game suspension automatically.
And you only hear that on Illegal Curve.
That's there you
Andrew,
go.
Legal, illegal. I know we got to go to break. Remus makes a good point. Danny Heatley for Marian Hossa, superstar for superstar.
Yep.
Doesn't happen very often.
Not very often.
No, exactly. Let's leave it there. When we come back on the other side, Randy Hahn from the San Jose Sharks play-by-play will be joining us. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on TSN 1290.